Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, on the Mendenhall Glacier, 10 miles from downtown Juneau. This is M0HBR in central London. Hey there, Mike.
Yeah, good morning, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R. A long time no here. Been burning the candle at both ends here, over.
Yeah, well, good to hear you, Mike. I guess we're here at Solder Smoke number 18. It's the 24th of March, Friday, early morning here. I don't know. I guess it's, is it Thursday night there? But that's where it is here. And I'm on the prime meridian, Mike, so I can say that's what time it really is. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, Roger. It's Thursday night at 8:26 at night, Alaska time. And I'm busily, I'm sure glad you called tonight, Bill. I don't think I would have had any equipment around to talk to tomorrow. We've been remodeling the house, and this weekend is the weekend where we put in new flooring underneath the ham shack. So all the gear's got to leave the ham shack and go somewhere else for a little while. Over.
All right. So it's time to take care of Solder Smoke number 18. Yeah, it's been a while. Well, good luck with the project. I hope you have got all kinds of plans to efficiently install ground wires and cables and coax and everything else. It sounds like it's a good time to do that, although I guess it's impossible to really plan for the kind of shack development that takes place with most radio amateurs. It's just kind of, you plan on something and you end up doing something different, but I'm always envious of these guys who have the foresight to, you know, to put a kind of a piece of PVC through the wall so they could put the coax out to the antenna very neatly instead of just throwing it out the window like I usually do. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to deal with that. I drilled through my floor, and I'm either gonna have to shine that one past the wife or just keep the holes there and work around it. I'm removing carpeting and putting in that. That wooden flooring stuff and snap together wooden flooring stuff, and so I'm gonna have to drill a hole through that, or else I'm gonna have to punch a hole through the wall. I don't really want to punch a hole through the wall because I just put new siding on the house, so I'll probably just punch a hole through the floor here, just like I got, and make a little box or something. And yeah, the grounding, I got a bus bar ground, but it's laid in a tangle of wire, so this will be an opportunity to mount that bus bar on the back of a brand new bench, and I'm thinking about using that. There's some black corrugated or ribbed plastic tubing with a slit in the side. I'm thinking about using that as a cable bundle, Bill. But I got a really nice workbench scoped out here. And really looking forward to it. I have a lot more surface area and be a lot cleaner looking. Rebuilt the kitchen, put in all new appliances and new cabinets and new countertops, and it's been tiresome, but the wife's sure happy there. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, it sounds like you're building up a good account there of projects completed. Put them all in the account. Yeah, on my workbench, I have my wife got me a real nice wooden bench. I guess it's about 6 feet long and about three feet deep. And we got it out of Home Depot when we were back in Virginia. It just showed up one day, and I think it was Father's Day. And it's real solid. But was with us in Virginia. It went with me to the Azores. Now it's here in London. I think it's a keeper. I'm getting very attached to it. I've got all kinds of things added on to it over the years that make it more useful. And I really like it. It's the one piece of furniture that I guess I couldn't do without. I guess you could tell when you become a real solder melter, where the workbench becomes more important than the operating table. I have the operating table here right next to it. Actually, my operating table is just an old wooden crate that was used to carry the equipment around from place to place. I think this was the box that they used to transport my Halicrafters HT-37. And when I opened it up, I realized that if I just stood it on its side and put one of the boards up on top of it, it became a perfectly sized operating table. So that's the operating table here at ME0HBR. It's just a wooden shipping crate with a kind of a piece of plywood up on top. Well, enough on the furniture and the home remodeling. How about solder smoke, Mike? Have you been generating any digital or perhaps some analog solder smoke there in Alaska? KL7R, ME0HBR.
Well, not much. The last I talked to you, I was en route to Seattle for a conference of some serious geeks. I took my KX1 and some parts down, and I tried to operate from within inside of a hotel there, and that was a zero. Conditions were kind of rough, and couldn't get out. But I went over and I saw my nephew and my kid sister and her husband, I had sent them that HW8, and he called and he said, "So Uncle Michael, should I just be able to spin the BNC connector around and around?" And I said, "No, you shouldn't be able to do that on the phone." And I didn't know what he was talking about, and sure enough, he'd backed off the BNC connector and loosened up the nut inside and twisted the antenna connector off. So I was looking around for some solder and didn't find any. Looking around for a soldering iron, didn't find any. So, but I did find a screwdriver. And so I heated the screwdriver up on top of the stove, and that was hot enough to remelt some of the solder and get the antenna wire reattached. So I was able to get his HW8 back on the air. We strung a loop of wire in his bedroom, and so he should be all set up. I gave him a little handheld Radio Shack multiband shortwave thing, and he was thrilled with that. And I got to go out to dinner with my kid sister. So that's probably the extent of the ham radio. And I did it was when I was down there, and the rest of the time's been up here. How about you, Bill? You've been melting solder or been thinking about it there? ME0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, I've been melting solder, but nothing as cool as repairing an HW8 with a knife heated off the stove. That's a pretty cool field expedient repair there, Mike. So, yeah, that's some special solder smoke for episode number 18. That's great. Well, my HW18 here is sitting here at I've got it hooked up to the 7 amp hour gel cell in the two Volkswagen solar panels, and I inadvertently left it on a few weeks ago, and over the course of a week it completely drained down my gel cell, which turned out to be actually a good thing, because it allows me now to say that the gel cell has been completely or almost completely charged by solar power. You know, they come pretty much fully charged when you buy them, and you know, you top them off a little bit, but you get the feeling that some of the electricity in there was probably certainly produced by the AC mains. So well, now more of the electromotive force in that battery is actually homegrown here, homebrew power with Volkswagen solar panels. Anybody who's looking for those, just go to eBay and do a search for solar panels and Volkswagens. You'll see what I mean. They send solar panels out with a lot of the new model Volkswagens, and they slap them in the windshield so that the electronics doesn't drain down the battery during transportation. and they're a pretty neat little size thing. And I use the suction cups to just stick them on the inside of the shack window, and hook it up to the 12-volt battery, and it's enough to trickle charge it. And it's almost to the point where it's fully charged now. So anyway, in terms of solder smoke, yeah, I've been working on my NE602 20-meter portable transceiver. Still working on the amplifier chain. But I've been doing it more as a learning exercise than in an effort to get the thing really on the air. Get it on the air would be nice, of course, but I've been doing it sort of in combination with my study of more of my efforts to better understand RF amplifiers, and I'm doing it with LT Spice. And man, every time I work on this, I become more of a believer in LT Spice. It's just such a cool program. I really recommend anybody out there who's kind of playing with this stuff should really download that thing as fast as they can. And what I do is I go over and I kind of work on the workbench for a while and see what's happening there, and then I go over and back over to the computer and look at the computer model and see what it predicts and go back and forth. And it's been a lot of fun. I've been trying to understand how you bias for class AB, because most of the finals and for SSB rigs or DSB rigs are running class AB. And the books, Solid State Design and Experimental Methods, all start out with class A, and they give you a lot of information on how to, set the parameters for class A operation. And then there's also a lot of information how to set things up for class C, which is, of course, what you're using most of the time for CW rigs. But it's weird because there's not a lot in there about class AB and where to set the bias point and how to set it up. I've come to figure it out, and I've pretty much come to the conclusion that a lot of it is kind of just hit and miss. But it's been fun, and it's been a real learning experience, and I think I've come to understand it a whole lot better. I might write up a little article about it, sort of how one radio amateur came to understand amplifiers, and it would be written sort of from the perspective of somebody who does not have an electrical engineering degree, sort of a real amateur KL7RM 0HBR.
All right, Bill. Yeah, it sounds like you're doing good there. I saw a couple items you wrote to the QRPL list on that, and I saw Steve Weber came back to you with kind of a good rule of thumb way to approach it. He said put a current controlling like an LM317 in series with the bass. And what did they say? It was AB was like 180 degrees of conduction or something like that. And then read somewhere where push-pull amps are how people are doing that, and that's what that that 80 meter PSK warbler was a push-pull. I don't think it was all straight to class A. I think it was push-pull AB. I'm not sure about that, but I kind of think so. Did you ever get a chance I sent that to you, I think, the amp for the warbler. Did you plug that in and take a look at that, or how did that go? Let's see. So they found water on Enceladus. I figured you'd have something to say about that there also. Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, I think I did look at the warbler amp you sent. Thanks, Mike. But then I think I got distracted by Eric's model of the Gilbert cell mixer, which was really cool. KE6US sent that to us, and he based it on the work of the experimental methods and RF design authors. But he came up with a real neat model, and I really liked how the double sideband pattern pops out of that mixer action, and the way he's got it set up, you can see it looks like a two-tone pattern going across the bottom, across the scope there in the audio area when you set the parameters of the scope for audio. And it looks like two-tone, but of course that's what a double sideband generator comes up with, even if you put just one tone in. But Class AB I think is more than 180 degrees of conduction. I think it's more like 270. It's it's not quite all the way to Class A, but it's not class. It's sort of, well, as the name indicates, between A and B. And one of the things we were discussing was how they set the bias on it. A very common trick is to run the 12 volts VCC through a current limiting resistor, and then through a forward biased diode to ground. So the you have the forward biased diode to ground, and there's always with a silicone diode. There's always silicone diode. There's a 0.7 volt drop across a forward biased diode. And the resistor you put in there is, of course, to keep from just shorting out your power supply. But it becomes, in essence, a regulated 0.7 volts, and you put that on the base of the BJT transistor, and then on top of that goes the input signal. So the 0.7 volts. Turns the transistor on. It forward biases the base to emitter junction, so you have some idling current there, and then the signal comes in and off you go. Of course, if you were to try to bias it for Class A, where you need conduction all the way through all 360 degrees, you'd have to put considerably more bias and more current through the transistor DC, but you don't really have to worry about that with Class AB, because it doesn't matter if it's supposed to go into cutoff for a portion of the signal cycle there. So anyway, it's kind of hard to describe. It's the same thing that you really need a printed page and some diagrams. And so, like I said, I am thinking about sort of writing something up on this. Saturn and the moons. That's really interesting. Unfortunately, we've had too much water in the atmosphere over London for me to be looking at Saturn lately. The weather's just been awful and overcast. But it's also been real cold. So we came home, went out to dinner a while last week, and we came home and it was so cold. I said to my wife, "I'm really glad that it's cloudy here, because it'd be terrible if it was clear skies and I felt obligated to take the telescope out in this cold weather." So hopefully wasn't complaining. The thing that caught me about the water on the moon there. And you've got the pronunciation better than I do, Mike. I didn't even attempt to pronounce that one. I just called it Saturn's moon. I also saw that this new spacecraft that has just arrived at Mars, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, and it's going to be capable of seeing objects as small as 1 meter wide. So they should be able to see the Spirit and Opportunity rovers on the surface from the orbiter, so that should be pretty cool. I haven't been doing too much in the astronomy area, mostly because of the cloud cover here. I did collimate the telescope, you line up all the mirrors and everything, and that helped get the images a lot clearer. I guess it's sort of like just adjusting the parabolic. The big parabolic antenna in the nanometer band. Hey, but one thing I did want to ask you about. I saw that a lot of discussion about how now we're at solar minimum, and they're predicting that the next solar max in the sunspot cycle is going to be a really big one. I didn't really read why they concluded that, but this they also, in the course of discussing this, talked about previous solar maxes, and they mentioned the really big one was 1958, an important year for me. That's the year I arrived. So I guess it's a, I guess it, that was sort of an omen for becoming a radio amateur, born during solar max, destined to become an HF analog guy. And then, so anyway, that, I was thinking, so the next one would have been 1969. And this made me think of something that would be, I guess, relevant to Alaska, or Alaskan listeners, because I can remember as a kid in suburban New York, one night, you know, bright lights shimmering in the sky, and we didn't know what the heck it was. I guess we didn't get too much aurora in the suburbs of New York, and I was never quite sure. It's one of these distinct memories you have from childhood, and I can still picture it. And it was all these bright, colorful lights shimmering in the sky. I'm thinking back on it. It must have been around 1969, and that, of course, was solar max. So I'm guessing now. For a while, I thought it might have been one of these experiments where they release, I think it's barium in the upper atmosphere, and it makes all kinds of lights. But I don't think we would have seen that over New York City. So I'm guessing that it was probably aurora, probably the only time I've ever seen aurora. What do you think, KL7R, M0HBR?
Yeah, Bill, M0HBR, KL7R. Yeah, I remember that winter. We were driving along, and I remember the aurora were particularly bright, clear rainbows, Well, this last solar max, they were seeing red aurora clear down into Mexico and Florida. So it's completely possible you'd see it in New York. I don't know about in the big city, but it seems like in the state you ought to be able to see it pretty easily there. I'm excited about a 1958 level solar max. That'd be something. I'd really like to have an all day long 6 meter opening to Japan. That would be a kick, or even a few hops and make a 2 meter connection to the West Coast. That would be a ball. I'm really looking forward to that. But they're using words like helioseismology. So they're looking at seismic ringing of the sun to see like if there's a sunspot on the far side of the sun that's going to be coming around in 14 days. That's pretty cool. And they were talking about measurements of this helioseismology, and they're talking about a conveyor belt of this plasma that goes along the surface of the sun and then dives into the depths of the sun and then comes back. And I forget what they said, something like a 45-year conveyor belt that pulls the sunspots, you know, in and recharges them and then pops them back out again in 11 years or so. But they're thinking the conveyor belt's going to be pulling big stuff out this time. Yeah, they had a couple of Canadian satellites, Anik 2, Anik 3, I forget which one. A couple of the Anik satellites got zapped in a previous solar flare and knocked them out. So if they get, this was like two solar maxes ago. If they have anything like the 1958 with all the electronics we have, that is sensitive to bursts of electromagnetic energy, It'll be interesting to see how much of it dies and how much of it just stops working temporarily. I'm really looking forward to some fun on ham radio, though. M0HBR, KL7R.
Oh yeah, it'd be great. I mean, I miss it. You know, when conditions are good, you know, you don't really appreciate it. But then when you get into this kind of period, and especially if you're struggling with low sunspot numbers, and you're doing it from a very urban location with poor antennas, surrounded by big tall concrete buildings like I am, it really is the pits. You don't talk to anybody. I remember when, you know, a few years ago, when conditions were much better, I was out in the Azores. I was CU2JL. I had one of the world's best ground planes. I was surrounded by salt water for thousands of miles in all directions. I was exactly on the opposite side of the world from Sydney, Australia. So when amateurs in Sydney, no matter where they pointed their antenna, they were pointing it at me. It's a neat little experiment to do when you deal with the antipodes. And so I would get on the air from the Azores with my 5-watt, 17-meter double sideband transceiver and get into hour-long rag chews with Australians and New Zealanders, and it was really neat. I mean, it was great. I didn't know how good I had it, and I was using a rotatable dipole. That's the only really rotatable HF antenna I've ever had, but I made the dipole out of two telescoping fiberglass fishing poles. And we found a piece of scrap lumber, put it on that, and then we used a TV rotor, and up that went up there. And then using cable ties, I just strapped the wire element of the dipole onto the fishing poles. And I had this rotatable one-element beam, Mike. And man, I felt like I was, you know, I was HF radio man out there in the middle of the ocean. And it was really cool. One time, a friend of mine who's famous on HF, he's well known, it's EI9FM is the call sign. We got on, he's in Ireland, of course, and he operates a V-beam. He's got a real big V-beam pointed in the right direction. He can reverse it, but it's got a huge signal. And EI9FM and I got on one evening, and he was in Ireland pointing down to me in the Azores, and we started talking about islands out in the South Atlantic, and all of a sudden we started getting calls from a guy who was on Ascension. So we worked one guy on Ascension, and then another guy came on who was down further south in the South Atlantic in St. Helena. And then the really weird one was we started talking about the really far islands of the south. There's Tristan da Cunha down there, but then way, way down there, there's a place called Gough. And unbelievable, we were just talking about it. We were the only two on 17 meters. I was running QRP, and guy came on and was from Gough. And it's a weather station. There's only 13 people on the island. And they go out there for a year at a time and do weather measurements for South Africa. And that was an unusual contact. We need some sunspots, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
That sounds like one of those great memories, great contacts. I've never heard of Go. I heard of Tristan da Cunha and Ascension, and the other one you mentioned, I'd never heard of Go before. I had heard and fine on your homebrew fishing pole rotatable dipole. That sounds like a good one to try here. I've heard of guys taking a and making a little mini V beam out of those things, and you know, basically making a dipole and swinging the tips together and laying it down horizontally and getting some directivity that way. I'll have to try that during the next solar peak here. I've got some pretty good antennas up right now. I've got three different. I've got a vertical, and I've got a horizontal 80 meter loop, and then an inverted V, and usually a combination of one of them. I can get out of here and make my net check ins up to Alaska, Anchorage, or Fairbanks every night. But some nights it's tough. That's really a good test of propagation, is to hang out on a net and do nets every night. That you really get a feel for how things are, and when it's good, I've taken this HW. I'm talking on a FT817. You know, I turn it down to 250 milliwatts, and I can talk for hours. You know, if the band's in on 80 meters, it's you know, up to Anchorage, which is you know, 700 miles away. It's pretty amazing. Well, Bill, I'm kind of not too technical today, but I sure good to hear you. And if you want, I'll be able to get back on here in a week or so. I should have a brand new bench and a nice setup here, and hopefully I'll have some of these cables strung a little better. And
I saw something that I thought would be of interest to Solder Smoke listeners: a homebrew MP3 player. Man, I think if you just Google it, I forgot to jot down the website. I know I'm supposed to do that, but I forgot. But it's out there, a homebrew MP3 player. So if you guys are really diehard Solder Smoke listeners and Solder Smoke generators, you know, and people complain that this is a sort of appliance radio and not real ham radio, well, here's a way to make it real. Homebrew your own MP3 player and listen to Solder Smoke on a homebrew rig. That would be good. I also noticed something that really caused me to kind of take a step back, and I really I'm a big fan of Hackaday, and I know many of our listeners are Hackaday fans, and I always think that the guy who puts it together does a great job, and I was really surprised to find out that he's 25 years old. I guess that shouldn't be surprising, but man, that's the guy's doing a great job, and he's got a brilliant future ahead of him there. And if he's already putting out Hackaday at age 25, well, good on him, and I'm sure he's going to be doing even greater things in years to come. I put a little video. I think before I went off to Switzerland, I promised to do to record something for Solder Smoke from the Alps, but I couldn't figure out how to get the record feature going on my wife's MP3 player. So it's pretty embarrassing after telling everybody else to do it. I couldn't do it myself with the MP3 player. So I had her just to put the camera on me when we were out in the mountains, and I recorded a video message. It's kind of goofy, but hey, it's from the Alps, and I promised to do something. So it's on the Solder Smoke Our Media site, and you can click on it. It's less than 1 meg, so there it is, up in the Alps, a message from M0HBR / Hotel Bravo. And Shaktopus, this guy has been who kind of pioneered the mobile from a bicycle, did great work on that during the 80s and the 90s, has put together a really neat rig, and it's called Shaktopus, like octopus but Shaktopus. So I don't think it'd be too hard to get to that via Google. I don't think there'll be too many other kind of hits with that word. All right. There's the gong. Time for Solder Smoke Mailbag. Got a nice email today from John, G4GOY. He's in the Yorkshire Dales here in the UK, and he's been listening. He travels around. He's a programmer, and he's frequently on the road. He burns the editions of Solder Smoke onto a CD and then carries them with him. Thanks for the nice comment, John. Jason, NT7S. Sent us a nice email commenting on our discussion of people who are receiving radio signals with their their dental fillings. He reports that there were rumors, I'm not sure if these are confirmed, that Lucille Ball was actually receiving Japanese CW with her dental fillings. And I thought that was unusual. I thought that would be of interest to our listeners. And I sent back to Jason something like, you know, the other side of the conversation, you know, fine business, old man. Receiver here is my right rear molar. We're going to an LM386. Mark Stanley in New Jersey sent a very nice email. He said he likes our mix of digital and analog discussion. And he'd like us to discuss a little bit about how we use how decibels are used. Before I do that, I've got to study up because it's the kind of thing that I understand completely, and then I stay away from it for a while. And well, I think we'll get something in there on that, Mike, in future editions. But I've got to crack the books a little bit before I say anything about it. Michael sends us a nice email from Melbourne, Australia. I think this is the first fan mail we've received from down under. He suggests that we list the number of the episode early in the show, and that's because he listens on an iPod shuffle that doesn't have a screen. So because they all sound alike at the beginning, it's hard for him to tell which one is coming up. So we did that this time, Michael, and I promise to try to do it in future episodes. Michael is building a crystal radio for his wife, and is he credits Solder Smoke for getting him interested in the electronics hobby again. We were delighted to hear that. He points out that that time is scarce because they have a new kid. I know where you're coming from on that, Michael. I have two small kids here, and the only way I get to do any of this stuff is by getting up early in the morning. That's my secret. But of course, I end up falling asleep early in the evening. But that's when the kids are nodding off. So it seems to work out somehow. So I think an early wake up time might be the solution there. And I wish you luck. Thanks for the nice email. All right, Mike. I think that's about it. I think we're about 35 minutes. Should be about 5 megs. And so let's say 7-3s to all our listeners out there. Please send us email. I'd like to get it very much. You can send it to soldersmoke at yahoo.com, and we'll try to mention you on the RSGB. We were very pleased that the Radio Society of Great Britain mentioned us on their weekly news broadcast. This was completely unsolicited. And I was particularly pleased with this because I'm a fairly regular listener. Every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, there's a UK station up there in Northern Ireland with a big signal on 40 meters that reads the RSGB news. And it's very nice. It's sort of part of my Sunday morning routine here. I didn't catch it on the air, but I did a Google search on Solder Smoke, and I noticed that in late February, they read a very nice piece about Solder Smoke over the air, and they also put it on the Radio Society of Great Britain website. So thanks very much to them for doing that. Yeah, that's it. I think 7-3 to all. Mike, good luck with the DIY projects there, and please give us a report next week. And again, anybody you'd like to, please send us an email. Let us know what you think of the show. Back to you, Mike. Wrap it up. KL7R, M0HBR.
Okay, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R, and yeah, the letters we got were really nice, and appreciate that. You got a couple of comments in addition to the ones you forwarded to me there, Bill, and that's a good thing. I'm sorry I haven't been doing much solder melt, but I got a legitimate excuse. good to hear you again, Bill, and catch up with you maybe next week. They're 73 for today. M0HBR, KL7R.